I'd like to welcome everybody today. My name is Becky McGinnis. I'm the Executive Director here at the Jacksonville Area Center for Independent Living. There are three or four other agency directors who are going to speak also after I've had an opportunity. Those of you who are agency directors, I have been asked by the media if you would say your name when you get up here clearly so they can hear it and then spell it so they don't have to hunch up afterwards and figure out. And that way they'll get it right in the media. Way back in June of 2015, JCIL sponsored a press conference to share our concerns about the lack of a state budget for FY16. Several of you were here then. Several of the agencies that are here today were also with us then. We decided to sponsor this press conference today, which just prior to when the Senate and the House were scheduled to return to Springfield, because we want to highlight concerns about some of the services, particularly for people with disabilities and for seniors, that have been drastically affected by the lack of a state budget. We are well into the seventh of a month of a 12-month fiscal year. We have no idea when there might be a budget. Today's Jacksonville paper carried an article that included phrases such as not optimistic, upcoming elections delay the deliberations, no indication the parties are any closer, along with the news that the House won't actually be returning until the end of the month. There's nothing there to offer us any hope at all. We are a small not-for-profit. At the close of the last fiscal year, which was at the time we had the last press conference, we had 12 employees, 5 who were full-time, 7 who are part-time. Here we are in January, and JCIL has had to lay off 1 full-time and 2 half-time employees. Those who are still employed have been cut to 4 days a week, or 80% of their work week. That's not only a cut of 25% in the number of staff that we employ, FTEs that we employ, but an appalling 40% cut in the hours that JCIL has available to provide services to people with disabilities who are trying to maintain their independence and participation in the community. Because we have also had to prohibit travel, there are people we can't serve because they can't get to us and we can't get to them. We have a wonderful program that is operated with federal money that is passed through the state to us. We can provide services to people 55 and older who are experiencing vision loss, often because they had the audacity to live long enough to acquire age-related macular degeneration or a diabetic retinopathy or something like that. Our services can help them get around some of the frustrations they feel about not being able to read the newspaper anymore or thread a needle or read labels when they go shopping or even know what time it is. We are currently unable to help people get special devices they need, and we can't go into their homes to help them learn new ways to do things that they've done all their lives. Although some services throughout the state can continue because they are federally funded, here's the kicker for us. This program requires that the state put up a match, and without a budget, there can be no match. So the one program I thought was we were in free because it was federal, we're not getting any money for because there's no match. There are more deaf people per capita in Jacksonville than in other places in the state because of ISD, and there are lots of people who want to learn American Sign Language to help them communicate. We've had to abandon our schedule of classes for a number of reasons that are related to the budget. We don't have anyone to handle marketing and registration. We don't have money to help pay for an instructor, and we don't have funds to pay for the additional air conditioning and heating to keep the building comfortable after regular business hours, which is when those classes are offered. We respond when someone calls or comes in, but it can take a couple of weeks or more to find time on the schedule for the first appointment for them. In addition, we serve not only Jacksonville, but rural Morgan County, Cass, Scott, and Mason counties. In all of those areas, transportation is a problem, and we can no longer travel to them. The employees who got laid off, they're on the unemployment rolls. They're collecting unemployment, which doesn't match their employment income, and it doesn't really cover their expenses. We are forced to lay off, but it's going to come around to bite us. Because should we still be here, our very low unemployment compensation tax that we are experiencing now will increase in the future to pay for what we had to do this year in order to survive. The excuses, reasons, explanations we hear are frustrating. Finger-pointing and blaming don't get a budget developed, much less approved. There are very few things that can be more important than to the people in this state than working together with other elected officials to get this impasse resolved. And I know the two legislative representatives understand that. Here's our message. It's a reminder when we go back. My name is Becky McGinnis, B-E-C-K-Y, M-C, capital G-I-N-N-I-S. Nancy, Tom, Jean, one of you want to take over?
Thanks. My name is Nancy Thorsen, T-H-O-R-S-E-N, and I am the Executive Director of Prairie Council on Aging. And this is a reminder that everybody gets old, and we're all going to need help at one point or another. And Prairie Council had to lay off 6 out of 15 full-time workers, and the other 10 part-time workers got their days reduced to 3 days instead of 5. We did also experience furlough days in order to survive. We are closed every Wednesday in an effort to hold down costs wherever we can. Every single one of our line items was reduced as needed. And this is going to be a reoccurring theme as you move through all of the executive directors. I just know that fiscal responsibility is important. I'm with you. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on at this point. Just get it done, because we're living within our means. We're trying to deflect individuals, seniors, who don't want to go to nursing homes. We're trying to deflect them from the nursing home and keep them in the community. And we're being inhibited because we don't have enough people to help them get connected to services, because I've had to lay off almost half of my staff. So just whatever it is that can be done, I think it's fiscally responsible to try to keep people in the community as long as they can safely. It's one-third the cost than paying nursing home care. I've said it before, but I just want to reiterate, whatever can be done, I'm even willing to take some cuts. Just get it done so I know what I can live within. You know, it's impossible to do the tasks that need to happen without any clear indication as to when this is going to stop. So thank you for listening, and whatever it is that you can get done quickly, we would certainly appreciate at Prairie Council on Aging. And we're all going to get old, so, you know, just remember. Thank you. That's all I have. Tom or Jean? Okay.
My name is Tom Frederick. I'm with Elm City Center, T-O-M-F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-K. We've been lucky so far. We haven't had layoffs. We've had the luck out of the past of having lots and lots of production work in our workshop. We work with EMI, Lundia, ACH. If you're in Jacksonville, you know they're no longer here. On a regular basis, we would have 150 people working today. Bring in 40 more people as temporary workers, get the work done. That is gone. So our process is changing. We are working with Reynolds a lot, and they're a great company to work with, looking for more work. The biggest issue for us by far is finding staff, finding people who qualify to do the kind of work that we do. We've had to look. Right now we have 4 group homes, 3 Scyllas, a group home funded by Departmental Health and through people we work with, about 20 apartments throughout Jacksonville. We had to go through 500 applications to find 20 people who can work as direct service providers within our organization. A lot of time involved with that. They had to pass background checks, drug checks, have experience, have training for past medications. This is for people that we work with have a hard time living on their own, who have a lot of medication issues and have other things that are very important for us. Most of the people we see have some kind of intellectual disability. I'll let it go say it that. I really thought this was going to be a real serious problem. Got together with our state association, the Illinois Association of Rehab Facilities, and by God, every place around the board table we talked about had the exact same problem. Art Dykstra in Chicago runs a place called Trinity. He had 162 openings for the exact same situation. The pressure's come getting more and more people in the community, more people into Jacksonville. Where do they want to live in the state of Illinois? We support it 100%. The trouble becomes, where's the funding to help pay for all that? To pay for apartments, to pay for transportation, to pay for the food, to pay for people to come to help somebody with their apartment. We have a number of people that we work with that our job is simply help them balance their paycheck every once in a while, or their checkbook. For other people, it's help them find the right food in the grocery store. They do things on their own. Other people, it's help clean their apartment on a regular basis. Other people need many, many more services, lots of physical hands-on things that works out well for them. The problem, just last Thursday, there was a Ligas court decree, L-I-G-A-S, that said the state is not in compliance with the Ligas court process because they're not meeting their goals of getting more people in the community. It's much more complicated than that. But a group is put together. They're now asking for a rate of about $15 an hour to pay for direct service providers to come to people's homes. The problem we face right now, I cannot pay someone more than $10 an hour to be a direct service provider. By the time we get paid by the state about roughly $13.50 an hour. That's not close enough. But by the time you put Social Security, unemployment, workers' comp, that $10 becomes about over $12. You get about a dollar. There's no money there for health insurance. There's no money for retirement plans. And the kind of staff that you get is what you get for about those kind of dollars. People who, for the most part, are not qualified to do the services that are required for us. It's a statewide problem that's not going away. We want to see more people in the community. We want to see more people living on their own. We want to see more people, in this lack of a word, disappear. Do what they want, when they want, how they want, and where they want. That's our target. We want to see that those things happen. It's not going to be for everybody, but to get to that spot, need money to pay for the services. That's my speech. Thank you.
I wanted Tom to go so I could feel especially small.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. My name is Jean, J-E-A-N, Jumper. Just like it sounds, J-U-M-P-E-R. I'm the executive director of West Central Mass Transit District. We have public transportation in six counties in West Central Illinois, including Morgan and Scott, Cass, Schuyler, Pike, and Brown counties. Back in July, we began to look at what was happening with the state budget. I knew that we were going to have some issues that we were going to have to deal with. As it went on in about August, we announced our first 25% cut in services. It was a very difficult decision to make. It was a very hard decision to make based on where our folks were going and what kind of folks were using our services. 50% of the folks that use our services are over the age of 50. About 68% of the people that use our services are either over the age of 50 and or disabled in some way, either physically, in some way transportationally challenged. They either can't drive or they do not have a vehicle and they do not have the wherewithal to purchase a vehicle. A lot of our folks are the folks that Tom's talking about that go and work at the $10 an hour jobs and have to have a ride to work. They have to be able to get to work when their clients need them. Many of them use our services so that they can stay in their homes. They use our services so they can get to the grocery store and so they can get to out to see Nancy, over here to see Jay Sill. They use our services so that they can go visit friends. They're living in their own home, but that does not necessarily mean that they're independent without some way of getting around. You have to be able to get around. There are people in this room that I see that ride with us consistently just to get to work and back. Or out for dinner. How many of us take it for granted that we're going to run through to the Hardee's or Burger King and grab a burger on our way someplace? Not everybody has that ability to do that. That's part of our lifestyle. It's what we do. Our cuts in services basically went to evenings and Sundays. We did cut those services. Along with the 25% cut in services, we're seeing about a 22% cut in numbers of the people that ride with us compared to last year. So the numbers are following suit. So you can see that there are folks that are going without services that they were needing. These are working people. These are people that were getting a paycheck, that were using us to get back and forth to work. They weren't necessarily the ones on unemployment that were just running to the grocery store late at night. They weren't the ones going to the bars. These are people that work in people, and they now have to find other ways to get there. Now, December, we had 71-degree weather. It wasn't a real big problem if you had to walk a few blocks to work when it's 71 degrees. How about Sunday? How about Saturday? You know, those are the folks that still had to go to work. Their work wasn't canceled. They still had to get there. Folks that have issues, I heard about a story just today, a gentleman that was in his car and had an automobile accident. He literally had to get in his power chair and go all the way from the middle of town all the way out to Rolling Acres in his power chair on a Sunday after Christmas because there was no transportation available. You want to talk about something that breaks my heart personally? That breaks my heart personally. We'd have been on call, somebody would have been there to pick him up and at least get him home, you know, and get him back and forth to where we want to be. We are still here, which is better than I thought we would be last August. Wasn't sure we'd still be here at this point in time. Over 50% of our budget is state funds. We have some federal funds, federal pass-through funds that we get. Our continuing resolution has helped us to continue to get some money dribbling in, and that's been very helpful in keeping us up and running for the hours that we are running. But we know that there are people going out there going without service, and we know that there are people that are desperately in need of that service. Our hope, gentlemen, is that something will get done, that we can look at what gets done. Y'all, everybody in here knows what a budget is. Everybody in here works with budget, and everybody in here knows what planning for your budget is. Sometimes your budget isn't as much as you want. Sometimes it's more than you expected, but you know that you plan on that budget, and you work the plan in order to maintain a business or even just a household. Without a budget, without knowing what's coming in, we can't do business. We can't plan our business. We can't plan our future. We're going day by day. We had 72 people on staff in July. We have 58 now. Everybody on staff, except for me, has taken a cut in hours of any place from 10 to 20. Some of them have taken as much as 50% cut in hours. And the only reason I haven't taken a cut in hours is I got the cut in pay, but I got the extra hours that nobody else got. So, you know, there's people out there that in our own staff that are going through a lot of what Nancy talked about and what Becky talked about. So this isn't just something that's just happening to one or two groups of people. It's happening. But where it hurts the worst is our seniors and our folks with disabilities that rely on these services, that have to have them, and that have to have the people to help them with those services. So, gentlemen, we know that you're working hard. We hope you'll work just a little harder and help us help them. All right? Thank you.
I am assuming that either of you would like to make a few comments, and I was going to take you in alphabetical order, but that's fine.
More senior.
Okay.
I'm Sam McCann. I'm the senator for the 50th Senate District. That's all or parts of 9 counties in West Central Illinois, which includes Morgan and Scott, two of the counties served by JASIL. I hear everything that Director McGinnis said. I hear everything that every one of these other directors had to say. I hear that loudly and clearly. I'll be back at the Capitol within about an hour or an hour and a half of leaving here after this is over with. Unfortunately, I may very well be the only elected official under the dome when I get there, because that's the way it is many days. I represent the capital city. That's a great privilege. And because of that, I'm at the capital most days. Again, most days, I'm the only one there. We have four legislative leaders. The leader of the Democrat caucus in the Senate, the Republican caucus in the Senate, the Democrat caucus in the House, the Republican caucus in the House. We have the governor. These five people comprise the leadership of the budget-making process in Illinois. I think it's shameful. They, each and every one, should be ashamed of the fact that we are in our seventh month and that we don't have a budget, because the number one thing I hear from business owners, the number one thing I hear from community leaders, community service providers such as these who have spoken here today, you know what the number one thing people are looking for? They don't come to me and talk to me about the tax rate. They don't come and talk to me about a lot of the other things that ends up, the minutia that ends up getting reported from day to day. The number one thing they speak to me about is what was referenced at least a half a dozen times here today. Predictability, stability. That's what they want. They want us to make a plan and then work our plan. That's what they're looking for. So the legislative leaders, when they are elected at the beginning of every General Assembly, every 2 years, they have a special, they take a special role in the process. They take a special responsibility. And I think it's shameful to the people of Illinois that many days, most days, those four legislative leaders and the governor are not under the dome doing the work of the people. I challenge them to meet me there. I'll meet them any day, every day. The number to consider today is $33 million. That's how many dollars we spend every day in Illinois, more than we're taking in. The governor's budget was approximately $3 billion out of balance. The speaker's budget was approximately $4 billion out of balance. That's not the worst of the story. The worst of the story is that because of their failure, because of the impasse, the people of Illinois are going to be on the hook for about $39 billion this year. So if we would have given the governor what he asked for, we would have spent $3 billion more than we would have taken in this year. If we would have given the speaker what he asked for, we would have spent $4 billion more than we would take in. But because these leaders haven't been able to agree on a budget, the taxpayers are going to be on the hook for approximately $7 billion more than we're going to take in. That's on top of all the past due bills. It's on top of all the underfunded and unfunded liability that we have. There's a much larger story here to tell. It's a larger story that's being lost. Again, a lot of folks say, well, we had to do something different. We couldn't keep going down the same path that we were headed. And that's true. We couldn't. The people of Illinois spoke. They elected a new chief executive officer because they said they wanted to go a different direction. But this is proof positive that just going in some direction for the sake of going in a direction does not necessarily mean you're going in the right direction. We're out of the frying pan and into the fire. It's time for the legislative leaders and the governor to show up to work 7 days a week, because in the rest of the world, in people's real people, in real lives, they have to show up until the job is done. 7 months without a budget is sinful. It's shameful. The people of Illinois deserve better, and I commit to you that I will do everything in my power to be a part of the solution and not the problem. God bless you. Thank you for letting me be here today.
I'm C.D. Davidsmeyer. C.D. Assume you can figure that out. Davidsmeyer. D-A-V-I-D-S-M-E-Y-E-R. I've stated many times in committee, on the House floor, when we've talked about these things, whenever we've heard from the other side of the aisle, well, the only thing that has anything to do with the budget is a tax increase. I've said, I'm willing to talk about it. I'm a complete realist. We are so far in the hole. We have so many unpaid bills that it's going to require some form of revenue. But the problem is, if we don't change anything in the process, we're going to be right back where we started in the next, probably within the next 5 years. The reality is if that 5% income tax was still in place, it wouldn't be enough to get by this year. We'd need 6% to get by this year. So we are hurting all around. We are hurting all around. And if you go back to this summer when the speaker continually said, the only thing, and this is here, kind of does this, the only thing that matters that has anything to do with the budget is a tax increase. The governor said, you pass that tax increase and I'll sign it. But I'm not going to help you pass a tax increase without changing anything. Now, I'll tell you right now, I don't agree with the governor on everything. I don't. But the reality is if we don't do something different, you're going to be held hostage into perpetuity. We have to figure out a way to do this. You look at our budget right now. 90% of our budget's being spent right now. 90%. Why is that? Because the state of Illinois has done a horrible job providing services to the people of the state of Illinois. Right? There's all these consent decrees, all these court orders, because we've done a bad job. And we put more money into this than a lot of other states that provide better services than we do. So we need to work with the providers, everyone here, to figure out how to best provide these services, what the needs are, so we can go back into our budget. There are a lot of things that steal money out of our budget that are duplicate services that we can look at. We are not going to cut our way out of this. I don't think we can tax our way out of it. I think we need open, honest discussion. I mean, that's exactly what we need. And we need people at the table who actually want to get somewhere. You know, you mentioned finger pointing and things of that sort. This whole time has been finger pointing. You know, we came into 2015, January 2015. We had a $1.6 billion hole in the budget. We came together. We filled the hole. Nobody was happy with how it happened, but we filled it, we fixed it, and we moved forward. It shows that we can actually work together. And unfortunately, in Springfield, oftentimes politics is more important than actually doing the mission that we're sent there to do. And I thought this was going to be a great opportunity for the speaker to help fix the future of the state of Illinois. And unfortunately, being the longest serving speaker in the nation is more important than actually fixing something, to change that legacy, to fix something, to fix the future of, you know, for not only your family and mine, but for his family. I mean, his family aren't leaving this state anytime soon, right? So I thought we had an opportunity for him to help fix the state and to blame the new governor. I thought it was the perfect storm. Unfortunately, it's become a battle of, hey, this is my state, and this is how we do things. And like I said, I don't agree with the governor on everything, but he's right that we got to do something different. We got to go a different direction, and actually, you all have to be part of that discussion. I hope it happens soon. I've talked to people that have said we could have a budget in the middle of January, and this was back in December, and this was people fairly high up on the majority party side who said this. But if we don't have one then, I don't think they'd do anything before the primary because, like I said, politics is more important in Springfield, and it's ridiculous. So until we get past that politics and actually sit down and quit throwing each other under the bus, you know, most people aren't willing to stand up and say, I'm willing to talk about taxes. I'm a fiscal conservative. I don't like taxes, but I understand the services they go to provide. As long as that money is being spent properly, I'm more than happy to pay taxes. But it's not all being spent properly right now. So, like I said, I've stated many times throughout the last 5 or 6 months that I'm willing to be part of the solution. We just have to have a less one-sided solution. So,
can I just say that you mentioned that we haven't done a good job of taking care of our citizens, and that's why we have all these consent decrees, and I really have a problem with that because...
I'm not saying the services you provide are bad. I'm just saying that...
Well, we have the consent decrees because there was a reaction to no budget. We had to take it to the court system in order to get paid, and while I appreciate that Prairie Council on Aging is getting Medicaid dollars to care for at least those individuals... The consent decrees...
I'm not referring to those. These consent decrees have been around for 5 years.
Okay.
Most of them have been around for the majority before this budget problem ever happened.
Okay.
So of the 90%, the new stuff in that is less than
5%. Okay. Well,
so
there were a couple court cases that came through recently,
right. But they came through only because all of these other consent decrees have existed for longer than I've been in office. So these have been around for way longer than what we realize. And I'm not saying to anybody here that you're not providing great services, because you are. I'm saying this: the state of Illinois can be more efficient with how we spend those dollars. So, thank you, though.
I would like to thank both Representative Davidsmeyer and Senator McCann for being present. It's with a little bit of trepidation that I say, does anybody have a question or that you'd like to raise?
Dave Blanchett, Journal Register. How worse can this be? Is it possible that any of these organizations, and please any of you speak up, will any of you have to shut down completely if this isn't solved soon?
JCIL will not shut down completely because we have a federal grant. And in order to shut down completely, we would have to give up the money we get directly from the federal government. However, that grant would require us to trim our staff to only 3 people, and we would have to leave this building. We'd have to go to much smaller offices. We would considerably reduce our services. Jean? Nancy? Tom?
Well, kind of not on my watch. We're going to stay to the bitter end and do what needs to be done in order to continue to care for as many individuals as we can possibly care for. I mean, we're talking about feeding seniors who are homebound. How do these people live with themselves? While they're eating lunch, they should be thinking about people who are homebound and need a hot, ready-to-eat meal and are getting it 3 days a week instead of 5. Prairie Council will not go away, certainly not quietly if we end up doing it that way. But, halving your staff has an effect on those that stay.
Mm-hmm.
So... We're the same way. Central Mass President, back in July and August, I wasn't sure that we would still be here. Continuing payments to a portion of our grant have helped us maintain what we're at about 75% of where we were. And they will take me out kicking and screaming before we ever have to lock the doors. And anybody that knows me well knows that won't be a pretty sight. But we'll continue and we'll stay up as long as we can, and do as much as we can. We have plans. If we have to do some more cuts, we have those plans, and they're there. And the last thing in the world I want to do is have to go that direction, because the first cuts were painful. The second cuts are going to bleed, and we just don't want to do that to the people that we serve. And I don't want to have to be the one to do that. You know, the people that we have not only the people that we serve, but the people that that we have on staff. I mean, those folks, they don't earn a great living on what I pay, but they earn a living. You know, they keep their lights on. Those are folks too that rely on us, and so we're gonna fight this as long as we can fight it. And I really do believe that we're going to come out of it with somewhere. But Nancy said it early. I'll repeat it again. Tell us what you're going to give us, and then give it to us on time. And we'll make the budget work. We'll stretch the people we have to stretch. we'll do the services we have to do, but not being able to plan and not being able to work a plan is devastating to business. And these are businesses that we run,
yeah.
Every one of us. And that is what's been the hardest, is not knowing what we can do next month or the month after.
Tom, did you have something you wanted to...
We've talked with our board of directors at Elm City several times about this over the last 5-6 months. Discussion from deck over and over and over and over again. We're not going anywhere. We're very fortunate to have saved some money over the years. We got some money in the bank. We've had no layoffs so far. But at the same time, because we cut the grass at JDC, which we do every summer, we have not been paid yet. We haven't. That's somewhere $25,000. Other jobs, we provide products to the state of Illinois. We have not been paid for those things. So, like every other business, that affects us at some point along the way. We've been asked multiple times, peers like me across the state, to hear over and over. Please help us move more people in the community, more people out of Murray, out of other places around the state. And they're going, no, can't afford to, can't buy the home, can't pay the bills until money comes to help us do those kind of things. So things are just kind of like sitting right where they're at. At the same time, I got to look in the long haul. I was at a meeting, I'll say names, first the people in Springfield predicting this will keep going on through the summer. Numbers of November for budgets, which is... People are going, that's a very, very long time, but this person said several times. So we're looking at long haul, not thinking now, thinking 5, 6, 7 months down from now. What do we do if nothing changes? Or what would I do if instead of being a budget based upon FY $14 or $15, they come down 10-15%? That becomes a huge, huge hit for a place like us. And the expectation is to take more people, can't do it. Can't get the house, can't find the staff, can't pay the bills.
Paul, I think you had a question.
I'd like to, Kevin,
I'd like to make a comment. I appreciate having McCann and David Myers both come here. Thank you. I'm glad you were brave enough to come here and give a presentation, but where is the governor?
We didn't invite him.
He could have come himself. Anyway, the second thing I want to say is that not only services for people that can hear, but also people that are deaf as well. Suppose deaf people need services, such as they need interpreters. The state has to pay those interpreters, but the state cannot afford to pay the interpreters. So then the interpreters can't show up and provide services to anybody. They're stuck. So deaf people will suffer. I just wanted to add that.
Liliana had
I was thinking that we have a primary coming up in March. And I think we need people in this country have the power of the vote. Maybe all of us have to think very, very carefully and look very carefully at our candidate, both sides of the aisle. And maybe we have to push the votes for the people that we think will help us. And, I mean, that takes a lot of thought and a lot of reading to see who stands for what. But I think we have to take voting more and more seriously and at the same time try to get people to participate in the voting process. Because our history of voting in this state is pretty poor. And to make sure that the people we elect are going to represent our needs, not their own needs.
Okay. Keith, did you have something?
This is a question I'm sure it's probably been brought up in the legislation, but how about getting more jobs in back into the state of Illinois, which would increase the tax revenue?
You mean like businesses bringing?
Yeah, businesses bringing jobs, maybe some industry, or I know it's not a whole lot of like factory-type work anymore, but things like that would bring more of a tax base into the state.
Yeah, it's basically expanding the base and not the rate so much, right? And, mm-hmm. and of course, that's a little bit of a longer-term answer, but it's the answer, ultimately, it's the answer we need. And that's what I think I said in my remarks. The number one issue, whether it's a large business, a small business, whether they're from out of state and are looking to come here, whether they're already here, which I think we need to focus on the ones who are already here and retaining them before we even start thinking about bringing people in. I mean, retention is more important than attraction, in my opinion. But the number one issue that they raise with me is that there's no predictability. There's no stability. I mean, that's what, and as the
Gene mentioned, these are businesses, these community service providers, they are running businesses. So whether it's the private sector, whether it's the public sector, they're looking for predictability, they're looking to mitigate the roll of the dice, right? And so here in Illinois, so the last place that you would stay or come to right now, unfortunately, is Illinois because of the great big question mark that's being created by the circumstances at hand. That's why it's so important to get this budget, even if neither side should get everything they're looking for. When one particular side gets everything, something's not right. That's not representative government. But both sides need to come together and hammer out a compromise, get a budget, and let's move forward so that we can get back on track to retaining those businesses, helping them to grow, and bringing new businesses to the state. You're 100% correct.
CD, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I think I agree with Senator McCann that, you know, the stability is what makes people want to move somewhere. And case in point, we had the opportunity in northern Illinois to get a large fertilizer production plant. And they decided to move to Iowa that had higher taxes but more stability. Right? They didn't move to Illinois because they didn't know what the future held. And that's, I mean, everybody in the state is dealing with that, and that's why nobody's looking to expand here, nobody's looking to move here. I think everybody understands that. I think it's less the, certainly a business is going to look at the tax rate, but I think it's less the tax rate than the question mark in the future. I agree.
Makes sense, yeah.
They want us to pick one and stick with it.
Yeah. Another question, one maybe?
Yeah. We've heard from the representatives, and both of them were very candid about who's to blame, and basically everybody has a little share of the blame. But would anyone here like to actually point a finger at someone and say, this person is ultimately to blame? And remember, this is for the record.
Well, I mean, it's not my job to pass a budget. So whoever's job it is to pass the budget, that's who's to blame. Because if I could do it, I would have done it 7 months ago. So get your job done.
If I could do it on my own, I would have done it 7 months ago.
Well, I'm very upset. I'm the Speaker of the House, and I'm a Democrat, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten ridiculous. It's gotten to the point where I don't care, bipartisan or not, just do your job. Mm-hmm. If I don't do my job, heck... 6 out of 15 people that worked for me did their jobs, and they still were let go. So there's a huge ripple effect to it, and that's I appreciate Becky bringing this to the forefront and providing the platform to discuss it. It's just so frustrating at this point. I just wanted to say one more thing. And how much it is the planning, because you know how much debt are we supposed to go into? How big a line of credit? How much a mortgage should I take out? Because I don't know if I'm gonna end up, you know, closed and with debt. So
well, and what banks are going to continue to support us? I mean, the fact of the matter is. The banking system in this area, at least, and this is the only area I've got familiarity with, but there were a bunch of banks, and their comment to me was, it's not you guys. You guys' numbers look good. You guys, your history is good. We don't know what the state of Illinois is going to do, and you rely on the state of Illinois for your income. It wasn't what we were doing as an organization, and I will tell you, it was a handful of banks. There was some panic setting in my office, and you know, when I'm looking at payroll coming up in August, and I don't have anybody backing me, not because it's me, but because they don't know whether or not we're ever going to get paid and whether they'll be here. And you know, there's no place else to go. There's no place else to go. We're a relatively young organization, and we don't have the years of planning and working through things that Tom's organization has. And so it's, you know, we're not quite in that shape. By God, before I retire, we're going to be. You know, thank you, Tom. Setting a good example.
Is there anything you think we can do, like Mr. Senate and in the House, with the people that can do lobbying the legislature? I don't know. Something we have to do.
And I would never tell you to stop calling me. I get what's going on. I completely understand.
Yeah.
I think every representative, every senator has to have the same kind of pressure on them that I have on me to move forward to do something, to move forward and come to a budget. Like you said, we just need a budget, right?
Yeah.
We just need a budget.
Yeah, I mean, everybody in the room has to work on a budget. And the state should have to work on a budget also.
Yeah, but we haven't had a balanced budget in probably over 15, 20 years.
But it wasn't the citizens that complained about 5.5% tax that went away.
I agree.
We kept paying it. We had to pay it, and nobody complained about it.
We've run in $32 billion and paid down like $2 billion in debt. $32 billion, that's a whole year's budget that we brought in extra and paid down 2 years of debt, or $2 billion.
Dee Dee, I think you said
the governor should show, be a good rule model. And the people that have voted for him, I know, we all think the budget must be happening, and so far, I feel that that's neglect. I think he's neglecting the people who elected him in the state of Illinois, and we should do something about that as well.
It's, and let me,
Paul,
can I respond really quick? It's not the job of the governor to pass a budget. It's the job of the General Assembly to pass the budget, and the General Assembly has not done its job. And it's because we have super majorities on both sides. They always say the eagle flies straighter with both wings. We've got super majorities in both the Senate and the House, so they can do anything they want or block anything they want. And in blocking anything they want, they can put the blame wherever they want to put it. And it's unfortunate, and I'm not sitting here trying to point fingers, but that is the political reality. That is the reality of the rules of the House that give all the power to the Speaker. And that's why our democratic system is not working for us in the state of Illinois.
I don't want to spend all afternoon here. Paula, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yes. This is Paula Chance speaking here. I'm a retired school teacher at the School for the Deaf. And I want to say hello, CD and Sam, and I wanted to ask you about the pension issues. Do you feel that we have resolved it, and will this help? I mean, what will happen with the pension issues? I mean, they still keep on picking on the pension issues, and that's the big problem. The problem is the pension. What is really the solution? So if we resolve the pension issue, then will that be part of the solution to the budget for the state?
I would say the pension is a huge portion of our issues, and it's not just the lack of payments that happened under Blagojevich and Quinn, it's the pension ramp that started under Edgar. I mean, everybody shares part of this blame. In 1999, I believe we were spending $800 million to make our pension payment. This year, we're spending $7 billion. And it's going to go up to $12 billion in the next 5 years. What do you think that's going to do to all of your budgets? That is not going to be good. So we have to be looking at all this stuff. And we also have to realize that there's a promise, a constitutionally guaranteed promise to somebody who works for the state that pension is going to be there. So we are we're trying to balance that promise and fulfilling that obligation with the needs of the state of Illinois. And it's not an easy situation. I wish I came in 10 years ago as opposed to two and a half, 3 years ago. Not that one person can change it all, but
I think specifically in regards to the pensions, obviously it's a huge pressure. There were several bills that were debated, a few were passed, taken to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has ruled that those are constitutional promises that can't be broken. I think, in my personal opinion, I'm not speaking for anyone other than myself here, I only see one way to fix the pension issue, because it does become a big burden on the overall budget as a whole. And I will also say, I want to speak to the fact that I will say, and again, to give credit where credit's due, not to pick on anybody, with the $32 billion extra that was taken in over 4 years, the $32 billion that the representative mentioned, that was extra money that was taken in over the 4 years of the tax increase while it existed, we did pay every dime of the pension liability in cash on time for the first time maybe in decades. So it's, while we may not have paid down as much debt as we would have liked, we also mitigated debt. We headed debt off at the pass, where in the past they borrowed money and incurred interest, where in the past they didn't make deposits, and that caused underfunded liability or unfunded liability for the future. One thing that did happen with that extra money that was taken in addition to paying down those $2 billion in bills, is that the pension burden was paid in full, in cash, on time, all 4 years. So it's not necessarily completely fair to say that nothing good happened with that the tax increase dollars. So the only way, to get back to what I was saying, the only way I personally can figure out how to fix this is to extend the horizontal axis of the ramp. In 1995, Governor Edgar and the General Assembly entered into an agreement. It's called the pension ramp. We've all heard that. And it was a 50-year plan. And it said by 2045, the pension systems would be 90% funded. Well, what they did was, it was convenient for them. I will give them that much. They knew how to make it convenient on themselves. The deposits were made to be extraordinarily low for the first half dozen to dozen years, and then extraordinarily higher the further it went into the future. And then to make matters worse, to compound the problem, they started skipping and borrowing almost immediately. So instead of a ramp that looks like something Evel Knievel might have gone up, like a wedge, right? Because that's what everybody should be envisioning, this gradual inclination. The ramp looked something like this, and we're here. They were there. They were down in the easy part of the ramp, and they still couldn't even make the deposits on time and in full. So here we are. This ramp is a parabola, not a wedge. So the only way that I know to reduce the vertical inclination of the ramp is to extend the horizontal axis of the ramp. So in other words, we need to come back, because that 50-year plan that said that by 2045 it would be 90% funded, that was legislation. That was not a constitutional amendment. That was statutory. The General Assembly and the governor need to sit back down at the table and say, okay, we're going to be X number of percent funded by X date, and then we need to stick to that. I mean, that's what the people are looking for, us to be good stewards of their dollars. The people, as you aptly point out, my dear, is that the people are willing to pay it if they know that we're being good stewards of the dollar. They want to know that we're going to pay off past due bills. They want to know that we're going to take care of the pension underfundedness. And because with what I've described, the pensioners are made whole. They don't lose one thin dime. We may pay a few more dollars in interest, but it's essentially like refinancing your home. The payment becomes more manageable every year. So instead of having to come up with $7, $8, $9, $10 billion a year, maybe it's $2, $3, or $4. And so I think if we are paying off past due debt, if we're taking care of pension underfundedness, if we're paving roads and repairing bridges, and if we're taking care of schools, and if we're taking care of community service providers, as long as we're being good stewards of the dollars, I think that's what the people will be happy to send us the dollars we need. They just want to see us be good stewards of those dollars. So I hope, Paula, that answered your question.
At that time when all of that took place, I was actually a tax preparer, and I would hear people complain, I'm going to get nailed with tax, but then they found out it wasn't that much, so it was no big deal. That's what it went along, and then all of a sudden they decided to drop it back, and I'm thinking, why? It's kind of like cutting a leg off.
I was just going to say, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. We've been here an hour now, and I think that's probably sufficient for us. I appreciate my fellow directors sharing their concerns. I appreciate Senator McCann and Representative Davidsmeyer coming in and sharing their concerns and their thoughts, and I appreciate the concerns of the audience. Thank you all for coming, and fingers crossed.